Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
My guest today is somebody who thinks he's a celebrity now because he's broken the internet a little bit, just a tiny bit. He's all over the news this week for his documentary, What is a Woman? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Matt Walsh. And before we get to that burning question, which nobody seems to be able to answer these days, I just want to show you the trailer for his documentary, which is excellent. Take a look.
What is a woman? Can you tell me that? Well, you're at the Women's March. You must have some idea.
Please, if one person could tell me what a woman is.
You are not here for women. We ask you to leave.
What is that?
I'm a husband. I'm a father of four. I host a talk show. I give speeches. I write books. I like to make sense of things.
A woman is not anything in particular.
There is not one particular thing.
It could be many things to many people.
Some women have penises, right? Some men have vaginas.
I like scented candles, and I've watched Sex and the City.
Yeah.
How do I know if I'm a woman?
That's a great question.
You're not a scientist. You're not a gender studies major.
No.
How do you know that you're a man?
I guess because I got a dick.
Can a man become a woman?
I'm not a woman, so I can't really answer that.
Women only know what women are.
Are you a cat?
No.
Can you tell me what a cat is? Do you want to tell us what a woman is?
I'm a biological woman.
All right, Matt, without giving us any spoilers, did you ever get your answer to the question? I mean, we've got Supreme Court justices that cannot answer this question. What is a woman? It's a big question now.
Well, I mean, I did get, we got an answer in the end, yeah. We got a lot of different answers, but we did get a correct answer at the very end. I won't say anything else because it's a big spoiler.
Okay. Did you ever in your life think that you would have to make a documentary to answer a question that once upon a time was so basic? When I say once upon a time, I'm talking 5 or 6 years ago, I may be a little bit further, but when I was coming up in school, this was not a big question, a difficult question to answer. Now you're walking up to women, you're asking them the question, and they're completely stumped by this inquisition.
Yeah, I mean, I think 10 years ago, if you had told me, I would have been pretty floored that this is a conversation. Although, one thing we get into in the film, and there's so many aspects to gender ideology that it's like 90 minutes can't even begin to cover it. So there are all these different avenues that I hope other people make movies to follow. So for example, we spend a brief amount of time getting into the history of where this stuff came from, where gender ideology came from. And it goes back, I mean, arguably it goes back, you know, into the 19th century, but certainly it goes back to the mid 20th century with two guys we talk about, John Money and Alfred Kinsey. And that's where the seed was planted. So although 10 years ago, if I had known that what is woman would be a controversial question, I would have been surprised by that. That's only because I and most other people weren't aware of what was already happening and kind of bubbling under the surface and making its way through our institutions, especially academia. And that had been going on for decades before.
What's really interesting is that I graduated high school with not a single transgendered individual.
Yeah.
And now that being trans is, it's like, you know, the new black. They still aren't trans, right? They're just, some people are lesbian, some people were gay. Now it is you go into a classroom and there's 5 or 6 people that identify as transgendered. How is that happening? How is it possible that all of these generations prior, we understood, by the way, I learned in psychology class, what gender dysphoria was. This used to be considered a mental illness, like bipolarism, like anorexia. I talk extensively in my book about my chapter on anorexia. Thank goodness nobody was like, well, you're allowed to just be anorexic and we're going to give you gastric bypass surgery even though you're 100 pounds. How did we get here?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, if you look at the numbers, the latest Gallup poll, they had, I think it's something like 20% of Gen Z identifies as LGBT and a significant portion identify as trans. If you trace it back to the generations, what you find actually is that starting with like our grandparents' generation, starting there and then going up, LGBT identification has exactly doubled generation over generation over generation. And this obviously is not something that's just happening naturally. This is all by design. And I think with trans in particular, we talk about in the film the kind of social contagion aspect of this, where these ideas are, I mean, they're all over Hollywood and media, especially social media, which is where kids spend all of their time anyway. Mm. So they're in school, and this is part of the peer culture in school, is the gender fluidity. And then they go home, but they never leave the peer culture. So then they go home, and they're still on their phones all the time. So they just never escape this world, and it's beat into their heads. And I think part of what's happening is that, I mean, you mentioned anorexia, you know, other things that people have struggled with in the past. You know, girls in particular have been susceptible to eating disorders and other struggles like that. And I think so what that tells us is that, especially when you're a young person, and especially a girl, but this applies to boys too, there are struggles that are kind of just a part of growing up, feeling, especially going through puberty, you feel kind of alien in your own body. You know, the changes are happening hormonally, physically, that feel strange. And that's always a struggle. It's normal. Now, society comes along and gives the girls in particular a framework for understanding their discomfort, where they say, oh, well, if you feel that way, it means you're actually a boy.
Right.
Whereas in the past, we would have said to them, oh, this is a phase. You'll grow out of it. You'll get past it. We don't say that anymore. Now we take this thing, which is a phase, and we turn it into
an identity. Right, and that's what's so bizarre, because I can't imagine, like, when I was going through anorexia, having a society that would stand up and be like, no, yes, you are fat. Like, you're 100 pounds, but you are very fat, and you should get gastric bypass surgery. And yet we have this confirmation that's taking place, and I don't really understand how they're able to delineate, right? So now when we start seeing these stories of people that are trans species, well, I don't have a problem with trans species if you're telling me that transgenderism is real. Like, if a person can wake up and say, I'm a boy, I actually was born a girl, but actually today I'm a boy. How are you able to say to an individual that thinks that they're a snake, hey, actually, no, you're not a snake, you're a human being? Like, how, I don't understand, when you're speaking to these professionals in their field, how they're able to delineate. And before you answer that question, I actually want to show a clip of a wolf person that you met, because I think that...
I met a wolf, yeah.
Why not?
So now we are seeing kids that are identifying as animals going to school, and they are purring instead of answering questions, and they meow, and the teachers are not allowed to question it because it's considered a queer identity.
So you have kids that are going to school and they're saying, I'm a cat.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers have to affirm them as a cat.
Yes. So it's not just
the schools are like literal zoos now, basically.
They are.
I am a 27-year-old transgender woman. I am a Wolftherian and a member of the furry fandom.
When and how did you discover this inner wolfness?
Probably around age 10 or 11. I was watching an anime about wolves and see the wolf running across the screen, and I'm somehow just intrinsically like, oh, that's me.
And have you spent any time around biological wolves?
Yes.
That sounds dangerous also. What context are you?
So I was a volunteer with a preserve, and I've also visited many wolf preserves.
Are you able to communicate with the wolves?
Am I going to have a conversation with a wolf in the way that I'm communicating you and I? Obviously not. Am I going to read their body language, respond appropriately to their behaviors and their nonverbal cues? Yes.
Would you be able to give us an example of this wolf communication?
No. I'm not comfortable doing so.
Okay. All right.
So I watched that, and I'm observing a mentally sick individual. And what I like is that he is speaking to you like you're the mentally ill one. He's like, well, obviously not. When I communicate to the wolves, it's not in the normal way that you and I communicate, Matt. Like, don't be an idiot, Matt. What's going through your head? Because you have this remarkable ability to keep a very straight face and to listen and to try to accept the information that they are giving you.
Yeah, I think that was the idea in the film, was as much as I... particularly with some of the, you know, we talked to a gender, quote-unquote, gender-affirming pediatrician who drugs kids, and those sorts of people in particular, I very much wanted to just yell at her and get into an argument, but we thought it'd be much more effective to let them talk and just ask questions, let gender ideology sort of hang itself. And so that's the strategy in that and every other interview. It's just kind of like, what we found is that questions, basic questions, are a powerful tool, but also silence. Like, because what they want to do is they want to give you their talking point, which is like a sentence long, and then move on to the next question and just leave it at that. So if you just remain silent, let them keep, let's hear more about that. And then you find that there's that's all they got. They don't have, whatever your question is, they have a sentence, they have their party line, they have nothing beyond that. And then, so that's when things begin to, quickly break down for them.
Right, and they get upset. They suddenly start getting very uncomfortable, even though you're being calm and you're being very kind to them. You can see that he suddenly gets very uncomfortable. And what's interesting to me, what strikes me about that conversation, is him saying, I got this idea when I was 11 and I was watching anime, right? Like, okay, so you were a child and you were a fantastical child, as all children are. Children are fantastical. They can make up things in their head. They're wildly imaginative. And you just saw a wolf on TV and decided, I'm a wolf too, right?
Yeah.
When did we start pretending that every thought that a child has is legitimate? And why are we pretending that every thought that a child has is legitimate?
Well, I think the why of that, it goes all the way down to what gendered ideology is, which is an assault on truth. And that's why so many of the interviews I had with people always came back to, I was talking to Pontius Pilate every time, it always came back to, what is truth? Whose truth are we talking about? Because that's really what this comes down to. This is the project of relativism. You know, the world is relative to your own desires. You can create your own universe and reality for yourself. And obviously, when you establish that, then of course you're going to have people that identify as animals. That's, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when the right was saying, "Oh, soon we're going to have people identifying as animals," and the left said, "That's ridiculous." This is always the way it works, right? Where the right has the slippery slope argument, the left says that'll never happen, and then 5 years later, it's happening. But of course it's going to happen, because especially with kids, as you said, I mean, if you tell kids that they can be anything they want to be and it's all about their own perception, then a lot of them are going to identify as animals, because that's fun. I mean,
they're going to die because, I've babysat kids that think they're mermaids, don't want to get out of the water, they want to be Superman and jump off of buildings. Yeah. A lot of kids are going to die if we pretend there's no such thing as reality.
They're going to die from that, and they're also going to die from a life of, trying to live in despair, rejecting your true self. And that's what leads to, the enormous amount of suicides you see among trans people and everything else. And this is not because of bullying or anything that they claim. It's because when someone is trying to live in a way that rejects their natural identity, that's a life of despair,
I spoke to a man who transitioned to a woman and then transitioned back and does a lot of work in this space. And he actually clarified for me that actually suicide rates go up after they transition. They don't go down. So this idea that it's because they're not being accepted or they're not being able to transition and that's what's making them suicidal isn't right at all. It's actually once they go through with these life-changing surgery, you chop your penis off, you turn your colon into a vagina, then you kind of get into this place of depression and realizing that your entire life has been a lie and that a cosmetic procedure didn't help to fix that and in many ways made things worse. We're going to continue this discussion up next and talk about Big Pharma's involvement in this industry. But first, a quick message from our sponsors over at Good Ranchers. Grilling season is officially here, but buying and prepping your meat does not have to be complicated. Good Ranchers makes it easier than ever to get the best American beef, chicken, and seafood this summer. And they're giving away 2 free ribeyes, $100 in value, to my listeners for a limited time only. Go to goodranchers.com/Candace and use my code Candace to get 2 18-ounce prime center-cut ribeyes for free with your order. With Father's Day around the corner, this is the perfect time to try a box of Good Ranchers. What better way to show your appreciation for dad than with a delicious box of 100% American meat? You can make a one-time purchase or subscribe and save $25 on every box. Again, they're giving away 2 free ribeyes, a $100 value, with your order. This is a limited-time offer, so do not miss out. Other places will charge you over $50 per steak for ribeyes like these. Good Ranchers is giving 2 of them away for free. These are USDA Prime 100% American steakhouse quality cuts of beef. Go to goodranchers.com/Candace and claim your ribeyes today before they run out. I do want to get into talking about these cosmetic procedures because you sat down with the surgeon and you discussed vaginoplasty, I might be saying that wrong. on a 16-year-old. So I want to illuminate that for audiences and have them take a listen to the conversation.
What's the youngest patient that you've operated on?
The youngest patient I've done vaginoplasty on is age 16.
Do you worry that minors just don't understand enough about themselves? They're not neurologically developed enough yet to make permanent life-altering decisions?
Absolutely not.
I want to punch her in the face. You did not punch her in the face. I don't know how, given that you have four children. What I hear when I listen to that is I mutilated a young child's body. That procedure, for people that don't know, they're taking a piece of your colon and they're putting it in the front so that it looks like, the key words here, looks like it's a cosmetic procedure, a vagina. How do you feel sitting across and hearing that I mutilated a child?
Yeah, that was probably the hardest interview we did in certain ways. And we were with our, the team after we left that one, we were just kind of like sitting there in silence, just kind of trying to absorb. Because you're really looking, you're kind of sitting there staring into pure evil, I think, as you point out. I totally agree with that. And what we have to realize, by the way, is that this is actually very common, especially with girls, the so-called sex change surgery. Top surgery, chopping the breasts off of girls is increasingly common. And they're doing it in California now down to the age of 13 is when they start with girls. And that's why it doesn't, the fact that you just cited that suicidality is the highest after surgery, that makes sense to me intuitively. I hadn't seen that study, but we were told that by someone in the film also, which makes a lot of sense because, the underlying mental problem is still there after surgery, but now you've added on this extra level of you've mutilated your body and there's going to be regret and everything that comes with that. So it makes a lot of sense that would be the case.
Yeah, it's very scary. And I love that in this documentary, you actually went to Africa because my husband, all the time we talk about various social issues, he spends a lot of time in Africa because he hunts and in the bush. And he always says to me, when you get to Africa and you start talking to these locals, they don't even understand the concept of gay. And I have this idea that we actually have become so progressive, we've become regressive in society. Like we've just gone like forward, forward, forward. And actually now we're like behind, backward. It's the reason why we're acting like medieval creatures wearing, masks as if we're like hanging garlic and warding off vampires, right? Like these things don't make any sense medically. And it's sort of the same way when you look at this transgender where they can't even grasp the concept of what you're saying. They're laughing at you like you're a crazy person, like you're somebody who's arrived from a medieval period and doesn't understand basic facts and how things work. That has got to, it's stunning. You went to a tribe and we're supposed to believe that they're backwards, right? They don't know anything. We're living in this forward futuristic society and they're basically laughing as you're trying to explain to them what transgenderism even is.
Yeah, that's part of the reason. Well, I'll admit that one of the reasons we went there was to troll the libs, because it's just it's very funny to go and have African tribesmen saying these things because the left can't. What are they going to do? It's like it's racist to criticize. So that was part of it. But I think more so it was to test this ridiculous idea from the left that they claim. They say that the so-called gender binary is a Western colonial construct. And, the idea that men are men and women are women, that's our unique Western thing. And you go outside of that bubble, you're going to find that people are very fluid and open and progressive. And then, of course, that's not the case. But we said, let's go and test it out anyway. And we found the exact opposite is the case, that actually gender ideology is a very insular, uniquely Western, modern thing. It doesn't exist outside the bubble. And it's very revealing when, as it happened to me, because I'm asking these questions and they assume, because I'm asking, that I'm actually confused. And they think that I'm just an absolute maniac. They were nice about it. I mean, they pitied me like a child, but they were nice about it. But now they put me in the position of having to, like, they were demanding explanations from me of how all this works. And so now I'm trying to explain it to them. And I think nothing reveals the absurdity of an idea more than trying to explain it to someone who has no shared frame of reference to you. Mm-hmm. Like, you're starting from ground up trying to explain this concept. And it quickly becomes obvious how vacuous the idea is.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick pause here before we continue this discussion. to hear a brief message from our sponsors. When did we decide to stop upholding free speech as a basic right? What's playing out right now at big tech companies and social media sites sets a very dangerous precedent. Look, it doesn't matter what your politics are or who you voted for. Everyone should have the right to express themselves freely. Sadly, the big tech monopoly has instead opted for silencing tactics and censorship. To fight back against big tech's control of the internet, I use ExpressVPN. Ever wondered how free-to-access tech giants make all of their money? Well, by tracking your searches, video history, and everything that you click on. Then they build a profile on you and then sell off your sensitive data. When you use ExpressVPN as an app on your computer or your phone, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address. That makes your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. What's more, ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. What I like most is how easy it is to use. It just takes one click to protect all of your devices. That's why ExpressVPN is rated number one by Business Insider. So let's stop allowing big tech to revoke our rights to free speech. Why not revoke their right to your data instead? Secure your internet with the VPN that I trust for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/Candace. That's expressvpn.com/Candace to get 3 extra months free with my exclusive link. Go to expressvpn.com/Candace right now to learn more. Somewhere in Kenya, people are just talking behind your back, being like, we've met the craziest freaking person from the West. You're not even going to believe what this idiot said. And I think it's such a brilliant thing to do because it really showcases just how stupid we've gotten in America. None of it makes any sense, and everybody knows it. It's basic instinct to know that none of this makes any sense, and it's extremely foolish. I do want to get to the person that you identified as the hero of the film. So I guess let's actually just watch a clip of Scott Nugent.
Every child that they convince is transgender and in need of medical transition, it generates $1.3 million to pharma. And we're believing a pharmaceutical company, Lupron, hormone blockers, reversible, so they say. Well, the truth is that in 2003, Lupron was sued and deemed a criminal enterprise by the US government. They paid the most fine of any pharmaceutical company at that time, $874 million, wrote a check.
Is Lupron chemical castration?
Yes. We're giving it to pedophiles, aren't we? We're giving it to people that are dying, and we're giving it to kids, telling them that they were born in the wrong body and it's completely safe.
Stunning.
Yeah, that's Scott Nugent. So that's a female who transitioned to man. And in fact, she says, one of the only honest people we talked to, she says that I transitioned to appear like a man, but I'll never be a man. That was her words. And now, having gone through the procedure as an adult and so many horrific complications from it, and she says that this is these are experimental procedures that we're doing to people, including kids. And there's an interesting dynamic between, like, we talked to the so-called experts who are proponents of gender ideology, and they're so evasive, and they won't answer any questions, and they run out of the room. And then you talk to the opponents of gender ideology, people like Scott Nugent, and incredibly open, willing to talk about anything. And I think when you have an issue and one side doesn't want to talk about it, the other side is willing to talk about it, almost already, like, you don't even need to know anything else. You already know who's probably on the right side of it.
Absolutely, because they're playing in fiction, and these people are now dealing in facts, you know, having your entire life ruined, and people do not understand all the medical issues that come from this. And it was that one stunning Reddit post, I think you covered it on your show as well, where this woman was just so shocked that her 20-year-old, who had been on hormones and had gone through all these various cosmetic procedures, was now depressed, didn't want to come out of their room, and said, my child doesn't even have sexual urgings, like 20-year-old and suicidal. Yeah, because they were 13, you blocked them from going through puberty. My child now has a micropenis, which they don't tell you about, right? There is no going back. You've now got a micropenis. You're sexually dysfunctional. And these are the topics that, for whatever reason, Big Pharma is allowed to lie about. And it's stunning to me that if you were a drug dealer on the streets and you harmed a bunch of people with your drugs, you're going to go to prison, right? The person who sold the drugs to Mac Miller, the rapper, is facing prison time. And yet Big Pharma execs always just have to pay a fine, right? We lied to you, we ruined your life, we harmed you, we killed some people, we caused the opioid crisis, now we're causing the gender crisis, because it is a crisis that we're on the brink of, but all we have to do is pay a fine.
Yeah.
Where is the justice in that? You want to talk about social justice? Where is big pharma social justice?
Yeah, and you would think if you didn't know any better that this would be an issue that left and right could unite on, because the left, they're supposed to hate big corporations. Mm. This is pharmaceutical industry. They make billions of dollars. Like, let's hold them accountable. Shouldn't we all be on the same page? But it is very interesting that the one industry, the one corporation, the one, you know, billion-dollar interest that the left will circle the wagons around and defend to the hilt is the pharmaceutical industry. Mm. And it's a conspiracy. It is an actual conspiracy against children in particular. And it's not just the pharmaceutical. It's the pharmaceutical industry alongside the medical industry, broadly speaking. This includes doctors and then counselors, psychiatrists. They're all making a lot of money off of this. There's a lot of money to be made. I mean, if you start with a 6-year-old boy who's confused about his gender, you could clarify things for him and say, oh, no, you're a boy and that's okay. And he'll be fine and he'll get over it and live a happy life. But there's no money to be made in that. You know. But if you were to fuel that confusion, now that's millions of dollars down the line for therapists, doctors, pharmaceutical industry.
Never stops.
Yeah.
You become a big pharma patient for life. Never stops. You know, there's no, like, you're not going to need something to deal with what you did to your body early on. There's always going to be something. And really, I think for most people, it ends up lifelong mental prescriptions is what really happens. Matt, as a final question to you, after doing this documentary, seeing how it's been received in the public sphere, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic about this conversation that we're having?
Short-term pessimistic, just because I think that the trend that we're on right now is not going to be reversed overnight. I mean, we're talking about the generation over generation doubling, and I think that's going to continue for a while. But long-term, I'm optimistic, because I think that this is a fight we can actually win. I don't say that about every fight in the culture, but this is one we can actually win. And because gender ideology is so toxic and damaging and insane in a way that almost everyone intuitively recognizes, but they've been scared into silence. What we tried to show in the film is that all you have to do is just stand up in front of it, look it in the face, and ask it a few basic questions, and it collapses in on itself. So it's very beatable. It's not something we're going to win by flipping a switch or win it overnight, but we can win it. We just have to have a little bit of courage, I suppose.
That's the most optimism I've ever seen from you, Matt Walsh.
That's the most you're going to get.
That's the most I'm ever going to get. Yeah, it's 50% optimism. I will take it. Ladies and gentlemen, in a word, this documentary is illuminating. Be sure to check out What is a Woman on whatisawoman.com and make sure to purchase the What is a Woman book, which is releasing on June 14th. It goes even deeper into the interviews and the topics that are covered in the documentary. Thanks for joining me on this segment of Candace. If you liked this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. To watch or listen to the full show, become a member at dailywire.com/subscribe.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.